Welcome to the Divine Council. I'm Jameson, one of your hosts, also known as the Miller of Souls. I have with me today the Master of the Seas, Baboons, and the International Man of Mystery, Sky Guy. Welcome, guys. How are you doing today?
Welcome.
Doing good. Having fun.
Playing lots of Elestrals, I bet.
Yep. Something like that.
So... something like that. You know, I've only played 150 games in the last 3 days. What do I know?
What are you talking about? I don't play card games. That's ridiculous. I'm a Minecraft streamer.
Yeah. Anywho, moving.
But anywho,
I mean, I even play card games. So it's cool. Wow.
So basically, what I want to kind of talk about today, you know, on this particular episode, is we're going to talk about the game of Elestrals itself. I don't believe that we've covered much about the actual game's play. We actually talked about the cards last time, and we opened up a lot of opportunities there with what the potential of the game is based upon our thoughts on what is weak and what is strong and that sort of thing. But what I'll talk about today is the actual gameplay of the game itself. You know, we talked a little bit about where Elestrals came from. Basically, A-Drive, the premier YouTuber for Pokemon, as I understand it, decided he wanted to make a card game that was accessible, fun, and as balanced as he could make it, based on my information. Is that the same feelings that you guys got from that?
You said premier Pokemon YouTuber, and I know him from his reactions to Shinies and his playthroughs. So I guess that's a fair statement. I know that he wanted to make a loving game that everyone could enjoy. And he said in one of his starter interviews, I think, that he wanted to make a game for a long time when he was younger. And he finally got the opportunity recently. And Magnitude was one of the first people to assist him, which ended up assisting with a lot of the water cards that I came to love.
Don't forget Fisk.
And Fisk. Of course.
Oh, yeah. Magnitude was the inspiration behind Viserys, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
And that guy, once he came into the scene, was immediately widespread into most decks. Just like a 5 attacker that just gets more influence if it gets through, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's a super strong card. It's very fun.
I think that counts for every card game. A card that gives you more board presence will always be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot of those in Elestrals, but overall, I mean, I think that the hype that A-Drive throws into Elestrals is what really keeps people going with it. Because once they start playing the game, then they're like, oh my god, I love this game. It's so versatile. There's so much here that I can do.
Yeah, but the thing that I would like to say is special about Elestrals that I like is the spirits. As someone that personally likes healing and recovery, spirits being both the attacking force that drives you and the life that sustains you is such a fun dynamic to me.
The resource management alone. Oh, it's...
Yeah, it's like, it's almost like caretaking. Like, if it's almost like, okay, I'm about to make a weird comparison, but it's almost like the human body. If you want to get into a fist fight, you're going to hurt yourself in that fight. Like, there's no way around it. Like, knuckles get bruised, like, your face, like, things happen. And that's what I think Elestrals is. It's like, this is a very peaceful world. If you're gonna hurt your opponent, you're also hurting yourself. And that's a unique dynamic to me.
I mean, it's possible, but it's not likely.
Exactly, yeah. Everyone gets hit.
I've seen decks that can recover from everything.
Well, no, you're still gonna get...
Yeah.
I mean, your knuckles are still going to get messed up. Like, that's... No one gets completely unscathed from a fight. That's just the world.
Everybody gets hurt in a fight.
Exactly, yeah. Everyone gets hit.
Right, and there's a limit to how much you can heal, you know, built into the game as well. So, you know, after you've used up all your heals, you're pretty much stuck with where you're at that point.
Yeah.
But overall, outlook on Elestrals is it's the gateway. It's the game that's going to get you into TCGs if you weren't already into TCGs. It's also going to get you out of other TCGs that you're either ambivalent about or that you are just not excited about anymore, or it's just the same thing over and over again. You keep seeing the same meta, you keep seeing the same types of decks, and you're just not seeing a whole lot of variety. Elestrals will give you that, because even with just a base set 5 spirits and elements, you have so much variety there and so many different deck styles you can do. Yeah, there's meta decks out there that people play. I get that. But I love playing the really weird, tricky decks that, you know, you don't normally think of when you think of meta. You know, it's like, why did that deck beat that other deck? Well, because I did something that it was unexpected. And I think that's the strength of Elestral.
Sometimes it can be surprising enough to even throw off the meta a little bit.
Yeah, and I think that's what I love about this game. And also with, you know, the next 3 elements that are coming up this year, we have so much variety coming. It's just going to be what's going to be the meta after Frostfall hits? What's going to be the meta after Daybreak hits? What's going to be the set meta after set 4 hits? I mean, what's going to be the meta here? Because it's going to change every time a set drops. It's just not going to remain the same.
I've got a question, actually. I don't know this game very well. How can you tell the difference between invokes and counters?
That's a very good question. It's the easiest way to answer that question is to, if you buy, most people, when they start out with the game, they buy a starter deck. And each starter deck has a separate card given with them that says which rune types or the icons correspond to which rune type.
I would like to say, for those that can't are still struggling with the transition between invokes and counters, I will say there is a positive thing coming out soon. Dan has revealed that he's going to be putting the names on the sides of the icons. He's going to be putting them on the icons. That way we are able to understand and be able to help teach, and like the newer players are able to understand what are the correct runes and what they do. So it's a very nice update. I think he said it's going to be around Daybreak that it happens.
Quite possible. Okay, so let me change tack. Playing the game itself was like, you know, so you bought your first starter deck, right? And the starter deck comes with a pre-constructed deck of 60 cards, a rule book, the aforementioned cheat sheet card that gives you the basic overview of the game and the icons in the game, as well as a 20-sided countdown die. All of the contents of every starter deck is pre-constructed, just like as I said, so it's all detailed on the packaging of what you get in the deck.
The dice also has the own insignia of each spirit the deck has in it. So if it's primarily wind, you'll have the wind icon as your 20-sided dice piece. So there is no 20, is the spirit itself.
I mean, it doesn't have to be, but it works.
Right. It's also color-coded to the color associated with that particular element.
I can't wait to see the solar one.
So, that being said, he's like, now we have the starter deck, right? And we're opening up our starter deck and we're looking at the cards. So, of the starter deck, we have a number of Elestrals, and then a number of runes, and then a number of spirits. Typically, it's going to be a varying different number of Elestrals versus runes, but you will always have 20 spirits, right? And those will all be associated with the cards that are in your deck between your Elestrals and your runes.
And you can only have 3 of each type of card in your deck. And the thing that I found interesting is that the underworld is always open to search through and look through. And if you have, if you really want to be extra with it, you can always confirm if someone's used all 3 of a specific card.
I mean, sometimes I even look through to see what's most likely to be there.
Yeah, I mean, if you know what they've already...
Just completely crush your opponent.
Yeah, if you already know what they've used, then you'll have a greater advantage on them. That being said, there are also cards like Amp Up that get the entire field, like, you've already gotten 2 of them, and then one's gone. Like, you already have knowledge of what they have and what they're probably going to do with it.
Yeah.
There's that, you know, but there's also the whole thing of, now that you have all of these cards, you know, what are we going to do with them, right? The game, pretty simple, pretty straightforward. Those of you who've already played the game know how it is. it's pretty straightforward. You can only cast Elestrals that cost one from, you know, and by that you just select the spirit that you want to use and you cast that card into play. And you can only do one cast per turn. So there's also a bunch of other stuff that's associated with that.
If you look at an Elestral, you can see that in the between their attack and defense stat, there is an icon. If you use the corresponding spirit to that icon, you can activate the effect whenever you want, or when it's specified when it can be activated. You can also use a different one, but then the effect doesn't work.
I would also like to say there are things known as special casts. While you can only do one cast per turn, a special cast is a way to get more onto your field. For example, Tadpuff. Tadpuff can expend a water in order to place itself special casted on the field. That way, you can easily get a two cost out within one turn. Another way to show this would be Foamy. Foamy, when it dies, allows its ability to special cast an Elestral from your deck, and it gets placed into the field in defense position. I like to personally use Foamy as a way to get out Moostation, a hard-hitting six defender that is really tough to get over, especially when they've got multiple on the field and I need to defend that spirit deck.
No, and that makes perfect sense. Now, bringing up that cold thing about Ascensions, though, you know, it's like the only way to bring out two or three cost Elestrals is by ascending them from an Elestral that's already on the field. So, hey, Sky Guy, do you want to explain how Ascensions work?
Ascensions take in the same slot as for action that the normal cost uses. And while you ascend to a 2-cost or a 3-cost, or you can even ascend to a 1-cost if you want, you can add spirits from other Elestrals to the card in order to increase the spirits total on them or to get the amount of spirits necessary to keep the card alive on the field. Because if you go from a 1-cost and ascend it to a 3-cost, but only enchant one spirit, the card dies because it's under-enchanted.
The thing that I'm reminded of, actually, when in regards to casting, is something Jameson knows very well because I played him in a tournament against this deck. He had Ignector. Now, Ignector is a very amusing card that almost cost me the win against Jameson, and it allows you to special cast two Ignector to the field in order to forfeit your attack for that turn. And he got three of them out. I was only able to get rid of one, and then up comes the Trifernal, a 3-cost, collecting from the other Ignectors. Now, that is a unique and scary way to get a heavy hitter. Jameson, any response to that?
I'm proud of that moment.
I'm proud of
I mean, you should be.
I love Trifernal. I love playing the Trifernal deck. It's so good when the engine runs. And, just running roughshod over people with Trifernal is just so much.
I believe the Trifernal is the only card that has a zero on the card effect. Like a zero in text.
Oh, it's one of the few, yes.
There are more?
There's at least one more, I think.
An example would be Wormite. Wormite has a very lovely ability of making opponents -4 attack, and you can do this every turn. And if you mix that with Trifernal, then you basically get a free destroy on almost any card that's not a 3. And on top of that, there is a lovely thing where even if you try to play your own Wormite against Trifernal, it gets destroyed immediately.
Let me correct you on Wormite. Wormite drops attack stat when the Trifernal only kills when the defense reaches 0.
Its defense reaches 0?
Yeah, so you have to use Frostmite, a new card in set 2 that has been revealed a couple of months ago.
That is a new card. Why did I don't play fire, as you can tell.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the problem is that there's no way to reduce the incoming Elestral's attack. Well, there's two ways about handling this, and it's really, really kind of cool. First off, if they have a 3 defense, Frostmite's going to work.
Frostmite. 5 defense, Frostmite's going to work. If you're talking about attack, PTA, which minuses by 2 and Warmite that minuses by 4 are your best options.
Right. But when you're talking about Trifurnal's effect, he takes effect when the Elestral is cast.
Mm.
There is no other card in the game that affects their defense during the casting of an Elestral, right?
Technically, Mistation can swap on casts.
Yes, but that is its own card. He is referring to weakening your opponent.
Yeah.
So while that's all cool, I don't use Trifurnal in that manner because you also have to expend a fire to use that effect. First off, and then secondly, it's not as good against some of the decks I've been going against because they either have a high defense when they hit the board or it's higher than 3. So it's not as effective. But he is a attack 14 beat.
Yeah. Who doesn't like it?
So, I don't care what your defense is at that point. I'm just going to kill you.
Also, I just looked through all the cards, and the only other set one card that reduces or has a 0 in the text is Spy Nymph.
Yes.
Which you can cast as an artifact, empowering the card that destroyed it and set its base attack to 0.
Now, I'd like to say, for those that think that this game is mostly, oh, you got the lucky draw, you win, there are things that can increase your luck. For example, there is Smoltuga that searches out fire spirits. There is Pelquarius that searches water. Like, there are ways to search out specifically what you desire. Aeolus is a divine god that can even search out its own specific wind. That way, it can get basically whatever it wants on the field.
Right.
And that's why there's an entire deck made for it.
So there are many ways to get what you need out. And it's not just purely luck, which is the fun thing. That's why building decks are so much fun. Like, each deck has their own unique way to get what they need.
Consistency is key in this game.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've all built multiple decks out of these cards. I mean, there's only 125 cards that are available through the base set, plus the artist collection if you were in the Kickstarter, and the founders promos also part of the Kickstarter if you have access to all those. But those are all just variants of existing cards. And even if you take out all of the variants base set, there's literally only 112 distinct cards. And that includes spirits. So now you're at 107 distinct cards to build a deck with. And there's so many permutations to that. So many different ways you can build that decks out of that. So many different combinations because a lot of the elements synergize so well with each other. There's the fire water decks. There's the earth water decks. There's the wind thunder decks. You know, just all sorts of various different things you can do that is just versatile. That's the only word I could come up with for this game is how versatile it is with what you can do with your cards in your deck on your turn.
There's also ways to limit your...
Fun fact, one of my first decks that I made was using fire and earth. That's a combination you don't really see that often. And it showed in the performance of the deck, but that doesn't matter because it was fun.
I built a fire earth deck that is very consistent and very aggro and wins probably about 80% of the time.
I enjoy my water fire deck that I've made over the last like few months. Like my most recent deck is definitely Krakatuga because I remember I would play 3 eruptions without Krakatuga just because like eruption was an amazing way to end the game because people won't think about it, especially if you see nothing but water, then up comes an eruption. But I started playing Krakatuga in conjunction with that and my water heals stall, and I was able to get them a very effective way. And so I really love how strong Water Krakatuga is, and I hope it gets nothing but stronger.
Right. Well, and that's the one everybody thinks of when you say fire water. It's like everybody gravitates towards Krakatuga because that is the one Elestral That is,
well, I mean, it blends so well because you get Smoltuga, and Smoltuga gets you a lot of outs like Warmite or Necrof if you want to add those. Like, they're and Necrof's right. an amazing five attacker that basically, if it's in defense, you still get to hit the spirit deck if an Elestrol is destroyed. It's expend one, so
yeah, that's a really good good point there, too, is the amount of things you can do to your opponent on their turn. There's a lot of burn stuff, and burn means, you know, just force your opponent to expend spirits out of their spirit deck. There's a lot of terminology, but overall, it just
like Marabog. Marabog is essentially a tax. You get taxed every time you don't use a earth or water, and that tax builds.
I mean, that's why you just play water and can never be taxed on the Marabog.
Well, I mean, if it's interesting that you also say that because that negates his tax, it also makes it so Tsunami does not affect you.
Right.
So everyone play water. The water guy approves.
And also, if you play water, you can, or if you play against water, some interesting things you can do is make use of their own galaxy.
Right. Misenchant and Elestrol, yeah.
Like, most of the time,
right, I mean, we're throwing a lot of cards out there and a lot of interaction between cards out there. I don't want to confuse anybody too unnecessarily, but yeah, there's a lot of interaction is basically what we're trying to say.
Well, one of the final...
So if you're new to Elestrals and you're unsure of what the gameplay is about, we'll go ahead and link in the description below to the YouTube videos that Elestrals has put out on how to play the game and whatnot. We're just trying to give a basic overview of the actual gameplay of the game.
I would like to say one more thing before we change the topic, and that is misenchantment. Yes. Sky Guy was about to talk about this, about how playing water will make it swap for galaxy, or putting water on an Elestrol will make it so Tsunami can't hit you. Misenchanting is such a important component to this game and makes it so fun and unique, because if I put a Lycra spirit on an Elestrol of mine, Sorlet cannot expend one to change it, or water with Tsunami. Like, misenchanting Elestrals can be very crucial in specific circumstances.
Right.
You can even, with the fire spirit, you can shut down burn a little bit.
Yep, shut down eruption.
Because the eruption effect changes if there's a fire on the opponent's field.
Yeah, that's all great points. Some of the things we need to keep in mind, misenchanting, key, especially if you want to avoid certain effects from your opponent. Also, the other thing that misenchanting does, which is the negative side of it, is that if you misenchant your Elestrol, you don't get their effect. Everything else is still the same. Their attack is the same. Defense is the same. But their effect goes away if they don't have the proper element on them.
Until it's properly enchanted.
Right.
That's something you can do with Nexus, of all things.
Yeah.
Or as your action, your main action for the turn with your casting, instead of casting an Elestrol, you can actually enchant an Elestrol with another element. So you could make that one cost have two spirits on it. And now it's going to do more damage if it destroys somebody when it attacks. Also, it will give you opportunities for ascension. You know, so there's many different ways you can do that. Well, one of the
there's also a benefit to enchanting, which is if you have a stadium. If you enchant an Elestrol already on the field with the spirit that the stadium boosts, it automatically gets that boost. And it infects the entire field. So if your opponent has Atlantis and a galaxy out, you can play a water and then swap your attack and defense and get the boost from Atlantis. So
another thing you can do is the extra enchanted spirit. Because if you have an Estrabd on the field and you don't get anything nice to draw, you can re-enchant it to activate effects. But if you want to get even more value from the spirit you just enchanted, you can use the same spirit to cast an invoke or a counter rune. Because who doesn't like more value?
Right. So that brings us to the other things you can do with those extra spirits.
Receive effects are amazing.
So receive effects are awesome. So like going back to Estrabbit, right? Whenever Estrabbit receives a Thunder Spirit, It can let you look at the top three cards of your deck, choose one to put in your hand, shuffle the others back into your deck. That's an amazing ability. And it gets that every time it gets another spirit put on it that's a Thunder Spirit. You can do that via Nexus. You can do that via Enchanting. You know, that's just amazingly good gameplay. You know, a lot of the advanced gameplay comes from properly using Nexus, properly enchanting, misenchanting, getting runes in play that are going to benefit you, having runes in play that are going to benefit you when your opponent attacks you or does something to you, you know, or being able to play runes that are going to be able to affect your opponent. I mean, all the different myriad things you can do in a game. It reminds me a lot of the interactions in other card games that I've played, you know, with how complex the interactions are versus the simplicity of the game. Literally, it's you take a spirit from your deck, put a card in play, or you pay for a card in play that you use, like a rune. You take spirits out of your deck, out of your spirit deck, and pay for that. Your spirit deck's your life. So now you are spending life to be able to affect your opponent to try and get their life down faster than your life goes down. That's the game. That's it. Beyond that, it's all card interactions and what you do with those card interactions. You guys agree with me on that? You think that I'm a fair assessment there?
I think that's fair, but what is your favorite card interaction?
My favorite card interaction?
Yeah, I'm curious.
Eruption, when you have less than three spirits on the table.
Oh.
No.
Just the shutdown? That's always a special feeling, but opponents hate it.
Yeah, I don't know. Burn is a thing. But my actual favorite interaction, Humbus, because I'm a mill player, right? And Humbus says, whenever a player casts a rune, the opposing player takes the top two cards of the deck and puts it in their underworld. I can do that up to four times per turn. So with my deck, I've played it enough times that I've gotten my opponent down to nine cards remaining in their deck before they defeated me. Is that ideal? No, I want to win. But deck out is an option. Once you get to zero cards in your deck, if you have to draw a card, you lose. So I'm still tweaking it, working on it. It has worked on several occasions. I've actually got probably about a 40 or 45% win ratio with it right now. Still working on tweaking it, you know, but
cool.
I know you're the mill player, but in my mind, like I've tried playing mill. Like it's a fun way to play, but you either need more defense or more attack. And honestly, you need a five attacker. Like I will always say that. Because, I mean, it's important.
That's if you want to play offensive mill. I play defensive mill, so I want more defense. Mm. I want to be more passive.
Imagine mill getting a six defender.
I don't see that. I mean, it's possible, but I just personally...
Or just fire in general. Fire will never get a...
Fire is made to be weak defensively.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's why I love Tsunami against fire. It's like everything's like one, twos, or threes. Like, mm-hmm. Nothing's too high, so... Fire itself will, like, I see it becoming more offensive before it goes defensive, just because that's just how fire plays.
There's also that whole fun thing about if you're crazy and you want to play Fluorocne and be able to get it into play, you've got an 8 defender.
That's true, but if you want to do that, you might as well use Ignector to get him out, right. But that's just a pain.
Right.
And I don't know, his ability doesn't seem worth getting that 8 defender out. Especially when most people are running a bunch of counter runes, that whole entire effort that you just put in is null and void.
Right.
Speaking of counter runes, one of my favorite interactions to do is tactically destroying my opponent's Hydreigon or Tryndra and using Poison Tip Arrow on the Pantera that comes out. Because you can use the Poison Tip Arrow effect during your end phase. You can just straight up remove the Pantera from their deck. Without getting their opponent getting any use out of it.
Yeah, but it still gets its ability because it was destroyed by a card effect.
I mean, most people don't really activate effect.
That's true. I mean, it's
what I've noticed. And when they do, the likelihood of them running two Panthers is not really likely.
No, that's true. It's just too expensive. Pentair is a very expensive deck. Oh, I was actually just thinking, how do you guys feel? Because the original Wind was a lovely little bug known as Nimbug. Nimbug was the original face of Wind. How do you feel about its replacement with Hydreig?
He didn't deserve it.
Nimbug was such a fun and interesting thing. Sure, it got shut down a lot, but I feel like it deserved to get more chances.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, Nimbug gets you Stratomoth through Cyrakun, right? And the Stratomoth strategy is an interesting one because it's all about blowing back runes from your opponent's field. So I find that interesting. But the sheer power of aggressiveness of Pentair makes so much more sense that they went that direction for the feature of the game. Because a lot of people like to play aggressively.
While it is aggressive, it's mostly just self-destruction. Like, you basically either have to, like, flash and draw or destroy yourself. It's just not...
I mean, it doesn't have to be about destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I've made decks that don't rely on getting Pentair out through destroying cards. Like, you can use a water deck to go into Pentair.
That's true.
It actually works better than you would expect.
Well, that's because water has so much healing and Pentair is so costly. Like, you need the heal for Pentair. Because if you don't get that Pentair heal... Like, you're just going to lose all your spirits, and if that Pentair goes, it's done. Like, most people stop the Cyrakun and Nimbug. Like, they stop Nimbug at Cyrakun. Like, you don't really see Stratomoth come out just because that's how good Stratomoth can be.
Well, the one thing that people tend to forget about also with Pentair, because I've noticed this about a lot of the players who play Pentair, right? They try to blitz Pentair out by, you know, crashing their Hydreig and Twindras and getting Pentair out, right? That's a six spirit expenditure that you're paying out for Pentair, right? When you can do it for three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most people are too eager with it.
I'm all about the slow play because, okay, you know what? I've got a Hydreig on the field. You didn't kill it? Okay. Here's a Twindra. Wait, what? Yeah, I ascended into Twindra. Now that only cost me two to bring him out, as opposed to three.
I have a feeling that slow play control decks will be very good in the future.
If it is, then Jameson will have an advantage as a more cautious player. And I mean, in fairness, like, I am also a slower player, and I'm going to keep coming back to this, but Draw Aqua is a good way for more recovery install for me. I've seen a lot of people be like, this is the death of Sluggle, and I just don't see that. Like, Sluggle is a very good card. Sure, it's a 2-2, but, like, it's able to get that recovery. And people are like, oh, just Poseidon and Aphoros combo. And I'm like, well, yeah, but think about how many cards you have to add to your deck just to do that. You have now added two extra cards that weren't originally in your deck. So it's just...
I have decks that run better without Draw Aqua in them.
Yeah.
Or would run better without them.
I
And also, at this point, you should just straight up change your profile picture to Draw Aqua. Talk about them that much.
Well, I'm just excited for healing. And I'm not going to, like, say, oh, Draw Aqua is, like, the go-to now. But it's just, like, I see people, like, talk about Sluggle being no longer useful. And I'm just like, don't diss on Sluggle, please. I make so much use out of Sluggle. Like, yeah.
I mean, nobody can play Sluggle better than you do.
I've gotten such absurd use out of a Sluggle. I've healed Nexus and then rose another Sluggle with an Atlantis and then murdered both Alestrals on field with two Sluggles. Like, that's glorious to me.
I got a challenge for you, though.
Oh, yeah, you have my attention.
Okay, Sluggle, Trident, Poseidon, Bag of Winds. Go.
You want me to do Bag of Winds as well. Okay, so that prevents back row. Atlantis, I use Poseidon effect. I'm not gonna... I might use Ephros in that deck, but it depends on how strong I want to make this Sluggle. Because right now, I see Ephros draw. Draw gets me more Sluggle, but Sluggle gets heal. And then I use Poseidon. Poseidon's Nexus gets on to Sluggle. And then I get that regen. Sluggle gets stronger. And with the Trident combo with Poseidon, it is immune to counter in, so I don't need the bag of wind, so I can just toss that. In order to get the pulls I need, I'll use Foamy, and Foamy will get me what I want for either a Moustachian for stall or anything else. And that's basically how I would, that's my first thought to it, if that's what you wanted.
What's with Atlantis, Poseidon, and Trident? What Sluggle's attack at?
That is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. That is 6 attack at Sluggle at base level with 1 Nexus.
There you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So that's 6.
Yeah, because you Nexus 1 from Poseidon to the Sluggle.
It is also 6 defense. Moustachian does... actually, Moustachian... Yeah, Moustachian.
I mean, Moustachian kills, but sure.
Yeah, because it's 7.
You could also do it with Vertaqua if you can get him into defense position.
Moustachian hits over with Atlantis on your field.
Yeah.
Moustachian do be OP.
Just a thought. It's a thought exercise.
Fair enough.
No, I mean, it's a good thought, and I'm not going to deny it.
But how humiliating is it that your opponent dies to a Sluggle?
I mean, I love it. It's an addiction. It's like you with Mill. It's a very special feeling. Because, like I said, I make so much use out of Sluggle, like, I could make that deck if you really wanted to, but I just don't see Bag of Winds in there because Trident does that for me.
The only thing that really stops is the Earthquake or the... Because you have the insane amount of spirits on the field, you can use the Resting on Your Laurels.
If I wanted to prep for Earthquake, I would use Hammer.
Hammer stops Elemental Effects.
Oh, yeah, no, that's for Ken Leo, my bad. What stops Invokes right now?
Leonite.
Yeah, so I was going to say Leonite.
And yeah, but like, is there any bag? I thought bag
of winds.
I thought bag only did counters. What did bag do?
No, bag stops targeting from rooms.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Never mind. I would use it then. I don't play bag. I forget all the time what that's effect is.
A 7 defense unit with a bag of winds is kind of through the roof on the defensive capability.
Yeah.
Full back row with Trident, Poseidon, Bag of Winds, and whatever else you want. Atlantis is in play, and you got a Sluggle that's standing there, staring down your opponent, going, come on, bring it. I got you. Let's do this.
A 6-6. Yeah, but then most people are like, why put in that effort when I can just Visk? And I'm like...
I mean, trying to look Visk wins you game.
I mean, you could, but like... Everyone uses Visk. Who uses a Sluggle to murder opponents? Like, I'm talking about the flex. Like, that's the impact. Are you kidding? If I destroy you with my Sluggle, that's gonna mentally mess you up. Like Visk. Oh, it's a Visk. Like, deal with it. Like, that's
for the people listening. And if you haven't tried it, try Visk Trident Lock. It's really fun. And there's not a lot you can do about it.
I don't want to encourage that. that is how annoying that is. I do not want to encourage that.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a lot of variety and a lot of different ways that you can go about. Because, I mean, Rune Destruction is a thing. Elestral Destruction is a thing. You know, and properly administrating those things makes it very unique in that aspect. Because, yeah, you could run 3 of all of these cards, but it doesn't leave you a whole lot of room for Elestrals. So then you got to trim down and tweak it and figure out what you're going to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, that's why you play Drops of Leith, though. Like, you don't have a lot of...
Right. That's what I do.
Elestrals at the current moment, being a mill player. So, I mean, that's why currently Drops of Leith is so crucial for you. Those who don't know what Drops of Leith is... Essentially, it is similar to Nog, as you will use it to show off cards in your hand, and then draw, or put them back in your deck, shuffle, and then draw +1 to how many you got rid of.
Really good for recycling, yeah.
So it's a very nice way to recycle, especially if you have less Elestrals.
Well, I run typically right around about 12 or 13 Elestrals in the mill deck. I'm thinking about upping that number and trying to figure out a way to do that.
Yeah, that's definitely a very low number. Most people currently play around 15 to 17 Elestrals in their decks.
Yeah, that's the average. I think I can probably get it up to 15, but the problem is that that keys off of runes activating, especially with Humbus.
Yeah.
Without that, you know, that's, you know, but it also keys off when my opponent casts a rune. So I've got to figure out how to keep my Humbus alive with and casting runes without them, you know, just killing him outright.
This is still the issue in my head, though, is that your best, like, attacker to deal with your opponent is Necruf as a fire, as Mill is mostly in fire. And that is the exact opposite of what Mill does. And that's why it currently has that issue.
I mean, I've been toying with throwing Warmite in there just to, you know, blunt my opponent's attack.
I think Warmite would be better than Necruf in your deck, just because it, in the end, like, minus four is just such a massive attack stop. Like, it's absolutely crazy.
So is Tsunami and Shield.
I mean, yeah.
And occasionally Gorgon's Gaze. So.
And there's, and, yeah.
By the way, Gorgon's Gaze is only available currently in the Firestarter.
What? So crazy.
I know, right? The thing is that looking at the starter decks, though, each of them has an interesting game mechanic that they focus on, that they play, except for Fire. Fire is an aggro mill deck, which is really kind of weird. So it takes a lot to figure out the dynamics of that particular deck. But I think that the other decks actually do run fairly well. I'm really enjoying playing Imperial right now because everybody's flipping on him. They're all like, oh, the giant chicken here, he's the worst. Like, whatever.
This is a giant chicken.
Yeah. I mean, getting in top half using that deck in a tournament is quite impressive.
I would like to put, though, they did state that the Fire deck did not get all of its base set cards that they were hoping to add for it because of gel numbers and the issues with having too many cards in base set. So I'm sure that Fire will eventually get balanced out in this way just because they already said they couldn't add all the ones they wanted. So I'm sure a influx will be coming of that, all the stuff that was supposed to be in base set. So I am excited for that.
Yeah, and I've heard that as well. And I think that the things are going to get better for Fire. Now, the thing is that I did play in the first ever starter deck tournament that they had on the app. And I played, or no, it was webcam. Oh, it was a webcam game. And I played the Fire Starter deck, and I took top cut with that deck in the Starter deck tournament. And people were surprised at how well I played that deck. And Dan was surprised about how well I played that deck. He was like, oh my God, the Fire deck made it into the top cut? Let's go. And it was featured in the semifinals, or the quarterfinals. Quarterfinals?
Water did not make top cut.
I tried, man.
I mean, Water just needs love. But that's just base set. Like, water is strong, but I want it to be stronger. It's just like, if things like progress, like, I need water strength. Because yes, I'm getting recovery, and like we see that. And sure, we've got Corbel that helps with back row, but again, I'm not seeing the strength I need, especially with Gorgon stopping my galaxies and mutations all the time. Like, I need something. And I'm not sure what it is.
The only problem with a high attacking water card, like a high attack water card, is if it doesn't have a good defense, it isn't going to be ran in decks with galaxy.
Yeah. Water's about the defense. It's not about the offense. It's all about defense. Fire is all about offense. Water is all about defense. Because remember, water and fire are diametrically opposed. So that's why that exists. Earth and air are diametrically opposed.
Like I said, I'm not saying we need like some crazy 20 attacker. Like I'm not saying we need a high attack. What I'm saying water needs is something that helps get rid of the prevention for Galaxy. Because right now, I'm almost like, I'm going to use Galaxy as like two of, like, or maybe a one of. Like, I'm not going to be playing a lot of Galaxy at the moment just because it just keeps getting stopped and gets self-destructed. Like, sure.
I mean, if you want to get rid of Gorgons, it's a good way to get rid of a Gorgons.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you lose your cast. Because remember, that was that you get normal cast. Like, that's not...
That's why you played a Mistation first.
Oh, you're forgetting one thing there, Baboons, right? Is you're spending one for the Galaxy. Your opponent's spending two to shut them down.
If I don't have anything on the field, though, they get a free attack, and it's two. So it gets back there.
Right. But the thing is that you...
And if they attack with Visk, it, right. You're just done.
But my thing is, though, is that they're still spending two on your turn to stop you, right?
Yeah.
If you have something in your back row that can stop them from doing any kind of attack on him, you're already ahead.
Momentum's so crucial, though.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. You already are ahead because you have the spirit momentum, because even though, you know, you might lose him on their next attack phase, okay, though, yeah, you've lost two at that point, right? Or no, you still only lost one because they spent two to shut him down. You only spent one to cast him. Then they attack you. You're still only losing the one from losing him. Yeah. Unless they attack you with something that has multiple spirits on it.
It just hurts me personally. I know that it's like technically an advantage, but it's just, I keep getting stuffed in that way, and it just leaves a bad taste.
No, and I get
Gorgons is such an amazing counter rune. Like, it's just surreal to me that that's,
thankfully,
it does what it wants.
Imagine, without Gorgons being in the game.
It would make a massive
format.
Are
so
you
much.
Kidding? Like, I build a deck that doesn't have Gorgons. Like, that's how like mainstream Gorgons is in this game. Like, Gorgons is such an unbelievably powerful card, and you can use it almost any time. Like, you want to do it at damage step? Do it. You want to use it at battle phase? Do it. Oh, you just cast something with an effect. You don't get that effect. Like, also, you can't attack with that Elestral. Like, it's just...
Right.
Even if they split up the Gorgon's effect, it would still be a good card.
Absolutely.
Like, if it just stops the damage increase or the attack increase during the battle step, it would still be a card that will be played
it's
in a lot of decks.
No button of Elestrals. Like, you want to do anything? The answer is no.
There are only 2 points where the card is worse than other counter runes. And one of those is when you already have one and you draw another one as your only counter rune. And if your opponent has two or three Elestrosaunt fields and you only have one, Gorgons isn't really that helpful. Unless they cast something that needs the effect removed ASAP.
I would like to say, as much as I'm griping about it, at least, like, sure, it's always a three of in most decks. But at the end of the day, it's only a 3 of out of 40 cards. So it's not that they're going to have it all the time. But when it happens, it's just rough.
Right. And I get that. You know, I've run into more Gorgons than I can count. And it's really, it's annoying when it happens. But you just got to look at it and go, okay, that happened. All right, next thing. How am I going to get around this? That's the basic way you need to look at it. People who get upset about their opponent playing cards, in my opinion, are people who don't like change or don't like being stopped in any way because they want their momentum to keep going. You know, and there are plenty of players like that, right? I don't like it when it happens, but I work around it because, you know, there's nothing else I can do about it. And, you know, the people that tell you, well, then play better or do better or build a better deck or whatever. No. You're not telling me anything I don't already know or didn't already think of. You're telling me that I should be better? Well, then give me some advice. Help me. Tell me I can be better with this.
I mean, yeah. It's The reason why I keep like saying that is just overall because I just, it's not that, like, if you gain the momentum over me, like, good game. Like, that's a good game. Like,
right.
Momentum should be given and taken. Like, the issue I have is that you're not only, like, regaining momentum with yourself when you destroy me, but you also make me lose, like, any, like, spirits I have. Because not only if I have a boost station on and you destroy myself with Galaxy, but I basically have a one attack boost station for that turn that can't attack you.
No, I get that. And I get what you're saying. But my point is that, you know, there's always an out. And if you don't have the out, then it's fine. Thank you ever so much for listening. We appreciate you. And we really like having you here, or Baboons being here, as well as Sky Guy. It would not be the same podcast without you guys. And we will see you next time.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. We hope you've enjoyed this program. If you'd like to know more information about Lustrals or any of the other topics we discussed today, just click any of the links in our description. They'll take you to the various different locations to learn more about Lustrals and the people that make it. Also, if you'd like to support us, you can just click one of the links in the description. That'll take you to our Patreon page, where just a small donation will get you behind-the-scenes content and other fun things that we're going to be doing in the future. If you'd like to support us in another way, please go ahead and like, share, and subscribe. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope you have a fantastic day.